Turn with me back to Ezekiel 8. We left off last time in Ezekiel 8. We're on page 1115 if you have a companion Bible. And we're going to pick up and do the rest of Ezekiel 8 and as much as we can in Ezekiel 9. We're going to probably going to go through Ezekiel 11 before we skip any because of the things that are going on here and what Jehovah is showing and telling Ezekiel. You know, the last time we were on, we were involved with Ezekiel becoming a witness. Not only is he going to be a prophet, but he's also going to be a witness. If to recap for just a second, you know, a week or so ago we went over some of it where he saw a hand coming down with a scroll, and he ate the scroll. He was ordered to eat the scroll, and he ate that. It wasn't an eatable thing, but this is the way that God put the knowledge within him. And it was written inside and out or on both sides of the page. And then after that, then Jehovah told him to, he was at his house with the elders at his house. And he was picked up by the hair of the head and transported back in time, and God showed him things that God saw and knew of. And, you know, each thing he showed him, each step of the things that he showed him, he said, you're going to see a greater abomination. You're going to see it get worse. And so he kept showing him these things. And they got worse. And this is where we left off in our last study. So this is going to be study 90. And today is the 15th day of June, 2016. In our study of walk. And we don't see walk so much in Ezekiel here, but we see the words go. And God is commanding through Jehovah, he is commanding these beings or Ezekiel to move, to go somewhere, you know, from this place to that place to the other place. So we see and understand that when he says to go or to move, basically it means to walk. And that's what they're doing in God's stead. So we're going to pick up with Ezekiel 8:13, and we'll just go ahead and get started and get it rolling. And 8:13 says this: He said also unto me, Turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than they do. And so we see here that the lesson from Jehovah continues with Ezekiel. And he says, Turn thee yet again. He's saying, here, let's continue to look. Because as we continue to look, then this verse becomes a little clearer. And thou shalt see greater abominations than they do. And he says, if you continue to look, you're going to see those more heavier sins. And, you know, I looked up these abomination things, and it talks about the things before God as being heavy, being things that are very heavy for Jehovah to accept. And this is the reason why he's purging those people out of Jerusalem and out of Judea and out of the place that he called home, because he's already told us that it was so bad and so polluted that he just had to give it up.
And this from the people that said, "We all the things in the covenant
we'll do. Everything we'll do." Yeah. Absolutely. Then we get down to verse 14. And 14 is kind of telling too, because it says, "Then he brought me to the door of the gate of the Lord's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz." Well, I had to, go back and do a little digging on that too. So it said, "Then he brought me," or that he directed me, "to the door," or to the entrance, "of the north gate of the Lord's house." And, of course, we understand that the place of God is always in the north. So that is his place of choosing. And he says, "which was toward the north." And so we're talking about the temple area here. And so my question to them was, where did they get their compass? Who had the compass? When it was laid out, who had it? Well, I think Jehovah had the great hand in that too. But if nothing else, they understood the stars and the plan and the purpose that was in the stars, so that the area of the north would not have been a problem for them. And it said, "and behold," when he's talking about it was toward the north, "and behold," so here's a behold. Wait a minute. The behold there is for emphasis. And the emphasis there was on women that were weeping for an idol. And this is absolutely, something that would have been, that had been forbidden by God to deal with.
If I'm not mistaken, I think Tammuz is the beginnings of Lent, what's left over from that today.
Okay, that sounds reasonable, because it says there sat women weeping for the Tammuz, and it had the article before it. And Tammuz is an idol connected with vegetable and animal life, and it was worshipped in Phoenicia and Babylon. And these people that Ezekiel is going to deal with are going to Babylon to deal with these people. So it was important that he see this, and that he recognize and understand the situation that God has with all these things, and how it was a great abomination to him that these people would just totally turn away from him and go totally to idolatry. So let's go to verse 15. "Then he said unto me, Hast thou seen this, O son of man?" And this is the 20th time that "O son of man" has been used so far in the book of Ezekiel. The 20th time that Jehovah has let Ezekiel know that he's the son of Adam. Yes. That, he's going to deal with these ish that aren't sons of Adam, but yet Ezekiel is being shown these things. So with the knowledge that he has in his belly, and with the witness of these things that he now sees, he is going to be, or should be, should make a great man of God for Jehovah. Okay? So he says, then he said unto me, thou hast seen this, O son of man, turn thee yet again, and thou shalt see greater abominations than these. So he just saw the women crying for an idol. Okay, what's greater than that? Here we go. Let's read, let's break 15 down a little bit. Then Jehovah said unto Ezekiel, he said unto me, hast thou seen this? Have you understood? Or have you seen what I have to deal with in God's perspective? Son of Adam, he said, turn thee yet again, or look more closely, and thou shalt see, or you will witness, more gross or more heavier sins than these. So evidently, you know, he's going right on up the ladder with the greater sins. And so this was what Ezekiel was taken there for. And then we get to 16. And he brought me into the inner court of the Lord's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of the Lord, between the porch and the altar, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. And they worshiped the sun toward the east. Oh my goodness. Sun worship. Okay, let's look at this one a little bit, because there's quite a bit in here. He said that he placed me, or brought me, into the inner court, the walled off space within the temple area, the inner court of the Lord's house, or of the temple. And behold, he said, or see this, because he made it sure that he wanted him to see this. And at the door, or at the entrance of the temple of the Lord, and this is an explanation of where this space was. It was between the porch and the altar. And guess what? This is the place appointed for the priest that were there to do their courses. You know what I'm talking about, to do the courses. They were 24 things of the temple worship that needed to be done by the priest. And it says, if they were about 25 men with their backs toward, let me get it right, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord. Okay? So here you got 25 men. So 24 was the number of the priests doing the 24 courses. So evidently, they, like other people of the world, they evidently kept one in reserve. So if somebody couldn't make their course that day, they would be somebody there to fill in. So they were 25, it says, men, with their backs toward the temple of the Lord and their faces toward the east. Their backside was toward God, and their face was toward the sunrise. Now, isn't that the situation. They turned their back on God. Of course, they already had. And, you know, we talked about in Jeremiah, that Jeremiah, it was told him that they could not, that all of all the people they were in the area of Judea and Mount Moriah, there wasn't anybody there that he could trust. They had all gone to Horan off to idol, to idolatry and idol worship. Okay. And so they were inside the holy place of God again, just like the ones that carved on the court wall and had the peephole where they could secretly go in and out, where they had carved and painted all of these idols on the walls inside the temple. That's how bad it had got. And then these were sitting there with their backs toward the worship of God, waiting for the sun to come up. Waiting for the sun. They were inside the holy place of God, where they were worshiping God's creation rather than God. So this was idolatry, and this was not the first time that it was seen, but it was seen early on in Scripture. Okay? So we realize here just pretty much what they were doing there in just in wide open. Because, you know, they were wholly given over to this stuff now. And verse 17 says, "Then he said unto me, Thou hast seen this, O son of Adam." That's the 21st time that we have it here in 8 chapters of Ezekiel. He said, "It is a light thing. It is a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here. For they have filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose." Well, here's another pretty good thing, because he's not done with showing him what's going on here. So let's go back and break that down a little bit. "Then he, Jehovah, said unto me, Ezekiel, hast thou seen this, or do you see and understand this, O son of Adam? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah?" See, this was not an important item to the tribe of Judah. They had gotten so far down in the dump, they boldly withstood God. So it to them, it wasn't a big deal. You know, not an important item. That they commit the abominations, that they commit sin, the sins which they committed here. And this sin was sins committed in God's house. And it wasn't just in one place, it was all over. He said, "For they have filled all the land with violence. Judah has saturated this evil everywhere." In 17 there.
Did you put my head in that number?
Yeah. So they had filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And this is part of their history. Over and over again, when God got heavy on Judah. When God got heavy on Judah, Judah would run off to Egypt. And stay for a period of time. And then they would think that God had forgot or whatever. And they came back. And they would come back. And they would bring in more adulterous stuff. Can you hear that, babe?
Say something, honey.
Okay. Can you hear?
I'll keep it.
Okay, you're going to keep it. So their history was that they'd go off to Egypt and then come back to Jerusalem, and they would come and go and bring more and more idolatry in as they came and went. And not only that, but it says, and lo, when you see that word lo there, again, this is an emphasis that was placed on something. And here it was the branch that he's talking about here. Because it says, and lo, they put the branch to their nose. Or to their nose, yeah.
The papers, we didn't hear good.
To their nose.
He wasn't well.
And it's dealing here with the Asherah. And that is represented by a branch of a tree cut and made into a certain shape, like the shape of a male appendage.
Of a what?
Like the male appendage.
No.
Okay. And so this was what they put to their nose. Now, we all know that God's requirement of a sacrifice, he always required a sweet and savory smell of the sacrifice cooking. And think about this. But the adulterous odor or smell of the nostrils for them was for the things that they enjoyed rather than what the Lord enjoyed. And so when they went to do their sacrifice to the idols, they put that smell to their nose rather than the smell of the sacrifice that the Lord required of that sweet savor of the fat of the sacrifice cooking and going up. So, you know, this had to really irk him to that extent. And then we get down to 18. This is the last verse of chapter 8 of Ezekiel. It says, therefore I will also deal in fury. Mine eyes shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, yet I will not hear them. It's almost like you're going back to Isaiah 6:9.
Yeah.
Only in reverse.
Yeah.
It is in reverse order.
Yeah, he's going to be the one.
He's going to be the one that's dull of hearing and unable to see. See, so, because it isn't time, you know, it isn't time for him to even think about start bringing these folks back. They had a long ways yet to go. So therefore, or because of this, because of what they were doing in that idolatrous worship with that thing to their noses, he says, I will also deal in fury. That fury is 25:34, and that is Kahamal.
You might as well sit right now.
It is Kahamal, and it means heat, rage, wrath, and poison. Which one do you want from God? None of them. But he is going to deal this way. He says, mine eyes shall not spare. So he says, mine eyes are going to take vengeance. And he says, neither will I have pity. He's not going to show any of his great grace to these people. That's not going to happen. And he said, and though they cry in mine ears with a loud voice, he said, I know they're crying. But he also says, I'm going to set my ears dull. He said, with a loud voice or to noise will I tune them out. He's not going
to listen to them.
He's not going to listen to them. He'd rather hear noise than to hear them. Because it's not time to hear them. He's not going to give them any time or any leniency for what they've done. Now, we go to chapter 9.
Of what?
Chapter 9 of Ezekiel. We're just going right on down the line.
I'm sorry, I can't find Ezekiel never in my Bible.
Okay. It's right after Lamentations.
That's the one.
Lamentations is just before Daniel. And in chapter 9.
Yes, he's there. You're there.
In chapter 9, verse 1 through verse 11, all 11 verses here deals with the punishments. Because when you see these words, O son of man, it just builds and builds upon the mind of God. And so this is the punishment that's going to be afflicted in the sight of Ezekiel. Now Ezekiel's going to see this. It's going to hurt him to the core. But this is the further part of that same lesson that God is showing Ezekiel, because when he sends Ezekiel out, when he throws him into the briar patch we talked about, when he throws him into the thorns and the briars and the scorpions and all this, Ezekiel is going to have to deal with these things that are very great. And he's being given these things to do, just like Paul was given these things of the mystery to do. Ezekiel was given these things to do to those people in exile there. And so it's gonna be bad. So the punishment is commanded here. Let's look at it. He cried also in mine ears. So Ezekiel said, Jehovah cried in mine ears too with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, and every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. So it starts out like that. He's just going to use regular people to do these things, really. And that just isn't the case. He cried also, or Jehovah also cried. And Ezekiel said, I heard him cry also with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near. That cause is 49:41. And that Hebrew word is mishpat. And that is to give a formal decree. So he's telling them to make a decree to those who hold rank over the city, and to assemble, to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapons in his hand. The destroying weapons there are weapons that can dash man into pieces. I don't know what it is, and I don't know, but it's deadly. It is very deadly. It is there to do it. They're going to be there to do a job, and you would think, well, they'd be a bunch of men show forth. No. Said, and behold. So the emphasis is on these six. And it says six men. But these are Enosh. And it's in a bad sense that God has brought them there. It's not for anything wonderful or good. But these Enosh are there for a bad problem. And it says, and behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lieth toward the north. So they come to where they were from the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. Now, it goes on, and it says, and one man among them was clothed with linen, with a rider's inkhorn by his side, and they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. Now, I don't know if they were seven in total. I don't know if they were six, and this one was dressed differently. And the Word of God doesn't tell us, if that be the case, what the other five were dressed in. If they were dressed in battle array for this killing spree that's going to take place, I don't know. But this one guy had linen. He had woven cloth on him. But it didn't say what the other said. So let's look at it a little bit. See, so when you read these things, you can't just read right down through them and say, "All right, you know, I know about that." Maybe. Well, do you or don't you? Generally, you don't. Six men, and you got a note there on two. And it says, evidently, supernatural. Asterismos, appendage 6. And it says, angels are often called men.
Yeah,
and if you look it up over there, when it talks in appendage 14, it will be Enosh in a bad sense. Okay? So you got six angels, if you will, moved by command from Jehovah. They came from the way of the higher gate. So you see, when the word went out, you've got came there, and that is Yahweh. They came on command of God. They moved on God's command. Okay? So it wasn't something that man it could attribute to man, but it contribute to God. It says the way of the higher gate, or the northward gate, up north, which lieth toward the north. And if you go back and look, and if you go back and you look at what we've already covered, this was where the seed of the image of jealousy was. Because God is a jealous God. If you go back to Deuteronomy and read it in Deuteronomy, it's kind of like a throne or a seat that sometimes God sets on it because he says, I'm that jealous. And he certainly has every right to do so. Okay, let's read on. And every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. So they were armed. They came there armed. And one man, or this one-ish, among them, was clothed with linen, or yarn, or divided fibers, and it was woven. You know, like you would use some sort of a loom to make it on. So it wasn't made out of a one piece deal like skins, like it would come from skins or something. But he was clothed in linen, like the ephod that Jeremiah had over there. Jeremiah, when God told him to get the ephod and go down the Euphrates River and go put it in the crack of a rock for a while. Okay? Because it was a linen ephod, you know. So it was a man-made. It was made out of divided fibers, if you want to really get down to the gist of the thing. And I made a note here that said, we're not told here what the others were clad in. So I guess it doesn't really matter. But this guy was clothed with linen. He had a writer's inkhorn by his side. And this inkhorn there is a vessel to carry ink, a cup, we could call it a cup, an ink well or an ink stand, but it was portable. It was one that he could carry like on a belt or something on his side, like we would maybe carry a pistol in that sense. But yeah, it was there as a instrument of marking, to mark things with. That's what it was there for. Okay, and this was by his side, or it was as a part of his dress. And it says, they went in, the six entered, and stood beside the brazen altar. Okay, brazen is 5178, and it's Nekoshith, I think is the way it's pronounced. And this altar there evidently was made from filthy metals because it was alloy, it wasn't pure. Now, you know, most all the things that you find dealing with God is either it is either pure or it's found in nature, like stones or whatever that they would make altars out of.
Something he made.
And so this is something here that these people had made, and we could only guess really what they were using it for. But nevertheless, there it is. They went in and stood beside the brazen altar. So, it says in verse 3, and the glory of the God of Israel was gone up from the cherubim whereupon he was to the threshold of the house. And he called to the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And it talks about the glory here, 35:19, and it's Kabod. And the glory of the God of Israel was gone up, Allah, 59:27. It had the glory of the God of Israel. This is Elohim here. It says it was ascended up from the cherubim, or from the winged one. And it says, whereupon he was to the threshold. So evidently this winged one was the one that watched over the way in or the way out at the sill of the door of the house or the temple building. And so the glory of God had already been removed from that part of it, see. So you see God at work there dealing with that, because he has already said that he had given up he had abandoned his house. And it said that he, Jehovah, called to this Ish, clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And so that's some information that we need to realize, that he's not going to stay there, but he's going to have to move on the command of God. And we get down to verse 4. And 4 says, "And the Lord said unto him." Now this is the guy with the inkhorn, with the marking, with the ink and the mark. "And the Lord said unto him, Go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof." So he's going to send this man out, and he tells him, you know, he's got to inquire as to how they feel about these things, and if they still feel this need for God, then he's going to mark their forehead for a reason, okay? And he said, "And the Lord said unto him, Jehovah ordered him to go." Again, there's the word Yahweh. That's God telling him to move. And he's got to go through the midst of Jerusalem, or throughout the entirety of Jerusalem, and set a mark. This mark here that we're talking about is for a sealing or preservation. So, you know, we can find it in several places in Revelations where the mark was placed in the forehead. And it was done for a reason. Also, I think Satan used it some with his mark too. So, you know, whatever it seems like God comes up with, Satan can come up with, you know, some of the same situation. But he says that set the mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh. And that the men that sigh is 584. And the word is Nakah. And it means those who groan and mourn. And cry means to shriek and groan. So evidently this guy with the inkhorn, he had to see what their outcome was, and get an understanding as to whether they get the mark or not. It said, "For all the abominations or the sins of idolatry that be done or committed in the midst of Jerusalem or within Jerusalem itself." And then we get to verse 5 of 9. It said that to the others, he said in mine hearing, "Go ye after him through the city and smite. Let not your eyes spare, neither have you pity." So, Jehovah is telling these others with these weapons of destruction, there, the remaining of the sixth angels, or the supernatural beings, whoever they are, the remainder of those, he said to them in my hearing, or Ezekiel is saying they were within my earshot when he told them this. I heard him tell them this. And so that is another part of his indoctrination as a witness. Go ye after him. That's for those that aren't marked. Through the city. And smite. And smite there is nalko. It means to strike and slay, to indeed kill. And so those that aren't marked were going to be killed. And he says, let not your eyes spare. So they were not to have any judgment within themselves to shield anyone. They were not to shield no one. If they had to mark.
The one angel was qualified to do all the picking, right?
Right. There we go. Neither have ye pity. And that's not to show sorrow for or feelings for anyone without
the mark.
Yeah. With no mark. Okay. So we get to verse 6, and it says this, and I know it sounds bad, but this was God's answer to what they done. 6 says, slay utterly old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house.
The old guys sitting around got it.
Well, the court. The 70 of the council, you know, during the Lord's time, it was called the Sanhedrin Council. Okay? So it says, slay utterly old and young, not to spare anybody because of their age. And it says both, or either maidens, both maidens, either the maids or the little children and the women. That is a large command. It says this, but come not near any ish upon whom is the mark or the seal of God. And start or begin at my holy place, or the holy place, or them holy place. And that word is Mikdash, 47:20, my sanctuary. Then they began, or they started, with the elders, the ancient men. Okay? You see, the ancient men, the ones that were carried off into Babylon was at Ezekiel's house when he was picked up by the hair of the head and moved back there. And so these guys were the ancient ones. So evidently, they were the ones that were there earlier than these people. But yet, you see, Ezekiel is getting the understanding that these guys are not any better than the ancients were. Okay? The way I see it. So then they began at the ancient men, which were before the house, or stood as the governing body or the court over Israel at one time. And that is, you know, that is a large order there, because Ezekiel's been carried back to these people when they did all this stuff. And so some of these people are not there now, but there were others that were there before them that were. Okay, verse 7, and he said unto them, verse 7, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go ye forth, and they went forth and slew in the city. So he said, Jehovah said to the armed men, or the angels, defile the house and fill the courts. Might as well go ahead and pollute and make unclean the temple, because it's of no use to God the way it is. So he said, you know, you can stack them up in the temple if you desire, with the slain or the dead bodies. Go ye forth. Start here. And they went forth and slew in the city. So they started in the temple, and they also moved into Jerusalem. And so they slew from the city, I mean from the temple, all the way through Jerusalem and to the ones that didn't have the mark. In verse 8, and it says, and it came to pass, while they were slaying them, and I was left. See, Ezekiel kind of got left behind in all this, because they were killing everyone. And said, it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, ah, Lord God, wilt thou destroy all the residue of Israel in thy pouring out of thy fury upon Jerusalem? So Ezekiel said, man,
you gonna get them all.
Yeah. And you see, so this was his way of getting rid of all those that were unfit. He says, as a witness I saw and felt the pity that they did not. Because they didn't feel any pity. They were told by God not to. But Ezekiel felt that pity that these six supernaturals was not showing.
Yeah.
And I was left there alone.
That had to be an empty feeling.
Yeah, that I fell upon my face, that I became prostrate upon the ground. You know, this was what he done when he saw the cherubims, you know, coming down. And he fell down before God because he had seen the glory of God. And he fell down on the earth there, and God told him to stand up. And he says, I shed tears and spoke. And I spoke unto God. And I said, ah. And that ah there is an outburst of words brought on by emotions. Ezekiel was showing the emotions that either God would not show and these others did not show because of their orders. Okay. And he said, Lord God, or Adonai, Jehovah, the question, I want to question you. Wilt thou kill off or destroy all of the residue in that 7611, that Shiareth. Shiareth, the residue. Are you going to kill off the final portion of God's chosen of Israel? And that you are spilling liquid, or basically you are spilling blood out of thy fury, out of thy heat, out of thy anger. And that is Ka-ma upon Jerusalem. This was a necessary purge that God was doing here. He could not. He was going to start over. He's going to bring them back. Whenever they come back, they're going to have to right all these wrongs. And I'm out of time. And so we can stop there, because we can pick up with 9 and go on from there next time. And we'll just go from 9 to 10, because I want to go into part, at least into part of chapter 11, because this lesson continues. It continues on for Ezekiel. And so that's one of the reasons why I wanted to go and bring these. And you can see that this word, the manner of life, or to move, or to go, or to do these things, you know, this moving that God talks of here is a directive from Him for mankind, or those under His control, to move and do something. And so that's the same way with our manner of life, even in this day and age. That when God gives us something to do, we're to move with it. We're to do whatever is necessary to get it done. And so, you know, this is not good news again. It's like it was in Jeremiah, but it was something that Ezekiel needed to know in order to deal with these people in exile, and to deal with Nebuchadnezzar, and you know, kind of get on the same page with Daniel. And have the answers to this stuff. Because he is now seeing why God did all this. Whether he knew it or not. You know, he is now seeing what God has seen.
Yeah.
And he's also seeing how displeased God is with those that didn't do what they were supposed to do. So evidently, there was a few that didn't get killed. But for the most part, I think most of them did. We, you know, we're not really told here. But evidently, those that weren't killed off at that point got carried away in the next two journeys, because Jerusalem is going to lay barren. And the temple area is going to lay barren for that 70 years that God required from them, the holy days and the Sabbaths. Okay? And so, Jerusalem is kind of growing. In that area, it's going to kind of be like a rainforest. It's just going to be taken over again by the normal woods and things that grew there, because, you know, you can walk off and leave a house and it ain't going to be long. You can't tell where it's there or not.
Yeah.
We moved up here 38 years ago. And last week I rode down by my neighbor's house across the road from where I used to live. And I stopped and looked. The trees have taken it over. I couldn't even see a house there. I don't know if there is a house there.
Did you set them things down?
No, I didn't set no trees down. Nature just takes back over things.
Yeah,
and so that's our lesson for today. That's our study for today. It's kind of self-explanatory to a great sense, but it's hard to read without looking up the stuff and get an explanation of what's, you know, what's happening and what they've seen and so on of what they've done. But Ezekiel, I think, is going to be a great witness for God and a good spokesman for him.
Why? Because he always taught, I know it was his place in Jerusalem, and all, but why did he always talk them back?
They quit doing what he wanted them to do. They started doing these things that he told them not to do. And it got so bad till he couldn't use them no more for his service. God can't use them if you've polluted yourself to a point to where he can't do any.
What does it say? Him who he loveth, he chastises?
Yeah.
They got chastised.
So they got chastised in a bad way. They got carried off into captivity, either that or they got killed. So, you know, look at it either way you like to look at it, but it's not a good picture either way you go. So thank you for your time, and I just felt like it was a necessary thing maybe that we look at it and get some, go back into history and get some kind of a picture of what went on. And we'll pick it up again next time. So thank you again for your prayers and we'll do our best to continue on.